Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dead America. Tales of the First Month. The Lighthouse. Chapter 1. Day 0 plus 11, just off the coast of Portland, Maine. David Wilson found himself in his favorite spot, a weathered rocking chair positioned by the eastern-facing window of his second-floor bedroom. Outside, a small patch of grass gave way to a seemingly infinite expanse of water. Waves, like old friends, embraced the rocks that acted as sentinels, marking the boundary between his island refuge and the boundless ocean. Once a lighthouse station, this diminutive island had lost its purpose in the face of advanced navigation systems. David, however, had seen the potential in this forgotten gem and acquired it through a spirited auction. For 3 years running, this quaint island had become David's autumn haven, where he'd immerse himself in writing his latest novel. An early riser by nature, he reveled in the ritual of greeting the dawn, holding a cup of piping hot coffee as if it were liquid gold. This year felt particularly special, as the success of his last book had granted him the luxury of arriving several weeks earlier than his usual schedule. It was a decision that might have spelled the difference between serene mornings and a much darker fate in the outside world. Beyond the confines of these walls, civilization had crumbled into an abyss of chaos and despair, leaving David with a future dilemma: the inevitable return to the mainland. But for now, that was a concern for a later day. When he'd arrived, he'd stocked up for his stay, ensuring enough supplies to last the winter, with rationing and a bit of luck in fishing to stretch his resources. He just might last until spring. And thanks to 2 dedicated desalinization pumps, water was a non-issue. As he gazed out at the tranquil scene before him, David allowed his thoughts to dissolve like the morning mist. It was this breathtaking view that had lured him to this remote corner of the world. God may have abandoned the world, but at least he still takes the time to paint a beautiful image to start the day, David murmured, his gaze fixed on the sky. The radiant reds and oranges danced upon the clouds, casting their warm glow onto the water's surface. Recent days had brought turbulent weather, but this morning the sea appeared calmer, a welcome change. Suppose I should get the day started, he conceded, placing the empty cup aside and rising from his beloved rocking chair. He patted the chair's back as if bidding it farewell. Same time tomorrow, old friend. Inside his well-organized walk-in closet, David contemplated a collection of clothing, a majority of them leaning towards semi-formal attire. Although he was the sole resident of this island, his old-fashioned sensibilities compelled him to adhere to one unwavering principle: always look your best. Today, however, he recognized the need to venture beyond the cozy confines of his abode, opting for a pair of sturdy jeans and a warm woolen sweater. Despite the morning sun, The storms of late had left a chill in the air. As he stepped out onto the front porch, David hesitated for a moment, struggling to suppress a surge of melancholy. While the eastern view offered a picturesque slice of paradise, the western panorama revealed the grim reality of the world beyond. Across the water, scarcely half a mile away, lay the remnants of Portland, once a bustling city with a population of around 70,000. It had suffered deeply in the wake of the viral outbreak. Fire had claimed several of the city's tallest buildings, their infernos raging unchecked in the absence of a fire department. The destruction had given birth to awe-inspiring nighttime skylines, and David had even captured one such moment with his camera. Yet, the absence of film development facilities and any living audience had left him with a bittersweet memory. Maybe future historians will be able to appreciate it, David mused, his voice tinged with uncertainty as he surveyed the shore below. There, hundreds of zombies roamed aimlessly, their relentless pursuit of prey a haunting testament to the world's collapse. Assuming there is a future that involves humans, he added, a note of doubt creeping into his thoughts. Shaking off these grim musings, David firmly shut the door behind him. A paved path led down to the dock area. When he had first acquired the property, its original wooden dock, dating back to the late 1800s, had nearly proven treacherous. A close call with a rotted board had motivated him to invest in a modern boat lift system, not only safeguarding his cherished craft, but making the island inaccessible by water. His accountant had once dismissed this decision as paranoia, but David had trusted his instincts. Now, more than ever, he was grateful for that choice. As he approached the dock, he noticed the water's surface dotted with approximately 24 boats, each carrying survivors who had narrowly escaped Portland's demise. Every time he took this walk, David was besieged by a pang of guilt. Among the 87 souls on those boats were women and children, and he could have welcomed them into his home, offering warmth and shelter. However, practicality had prevailed when they had pleaded for refuge. His 3-month supply of food would have dwindled rapidly with additional mouths to feed, and he couldn't predict the intentions of these strangers. In a pre-apocalyptic world, he had been reclusive by nature. And now, in the post-apocalyptic reality, his isolation was even more pronounced. Standing at the edge of his dock, David surveyed his boat, safely hoisted 8 feet above the water. It seemed to be in good condition despite the recent storms. His gaze then shifted to the flotilla of survivors. Some of the boats were aligned in the middle of the water, but a few stretched out toward his dock. "Good morning down there. Anybody awake?" David called out, hoping for a sign of life from the flotilla. A few moments passed before a disheveled man emerged from below decks, bearing the name Johnny. He appeared to be in his early 40s, displaying the telltale signs of hardship. His clothes were tattered, his hair unkempt, and a 5 o'clock shadow that had extended well into the late hours of the evening. "Haven't seen you in a few days," Johnny remarked, his voice laced with a touch of concern, wondering if you were still alive. David, guilt written on his face, replied, "My apologies, Johnny. That storm was something else." Johnny shot him a knowing look, conveying more than words could express. David realized his mistake as their eyes met once again and quickly added, "Again, my apologies." Behind Johnny's gaze, a silent rage smoldered. Life on the water was unforgiving, especially with a random assortment of individuals ill-suited for a life at sea. Yet, he suppressed his anger for a couple of reasons. While he was frustrated with David for leaving them at the mercy of the sea, he understood the decision. If he were in David's shoes, he might have done the same. Moreover, David had provided something they couldn't procure themselves. Fresh water. "It's okay, David," Johnny finally conceded. "Just glad to see you're alive and kicking." David chuckled faintly. "I may be getting up there in age, but not dead yet." Johnny's expression changed, a hint of seriousness in his eyes. "I have quite the collection for you this morning." "Let me get the lift," David offered, making his way toward his boat. He flipped up a plastic tarp and reached inside, revealing a large plastic trash can with a thick rope attached to the handles. Lowering it down to Johnny, he watched as it filled with every sealable container they had. Bottles, jugs, even a couple of gallon-sized freezer bags. "It's filled," Johnny confirmed. And David hoisted the trash can back up, examining its contents with a realization that it would be a long morning. "Going to take me a bit for the first load," David admitted. Johnny's voice carried a hint of bitterness as he replied, "Not like I'm going anywhere." David chose to let the venomous tone slide. He knew Johnny appreciated his efforts, even if he resented the situation. David began loading the containers into a wagon, hauling it back up the path to his outbuilding. One by one, he filled them with fresh water, the hum of his desalinization engine providing a reassuring backdrop. Halfway through the containers, he paused, realizing that carrying more would be a struggle. "One load down," he said, straining under the weight as he pulled the gallons of water back down the path. His muscles ached, but he maintained his focus, gazing at the distant skyline. Despite the ongoing fire in one of the high-rises, its beauty captivated him. As he neared the dock, something caught his eye. A bright reflection on the roof of a four-story building just off from the docks on the mainland. At first, he dismissed it as a mere window's reflection. However, it persisted, moving purposefully, disappearing and reappearing, as if someone was manipulating it. David halted in his tracks, staring intently across the water, giving it his full attention. The reflection moved with intent, no longer resembling a window's play of light. He quickened his pace, reaching the waterline. This was the first sign of life he had seen from the mainland in over a week. David promptly loaded up the water he had brought down into the trash can, pushing it over the side and yelling down below, "Johnny, tell me you see that." Once again, Johnny emerged from below decks, looking disoriented as if he had just woken up. "See what?" "Look across the water towards the docks," David instructed, pointing at the four-story building just beyond. Johnny took a moment, squinting as he spotted the reflection. "Just the sun on the windows." Johnny initially dismissed it, not sure why you're so excited. David urged him to look closer. "It's not a window. It's a person." Johnny continued staring, finally seeing what David had observed. "Well, David, I think you're right. But with as many of those things that are on the streets, that person might as well be 1,000 miles away." David lowered the water all the way down onto the boat below. As Johnny unloaded the containers, David spoke up. "Is that enough water to get you by for a little while?" Johnny nodded. "Yeah, but what about the rest?" "I'll get to it, I promise. But I need to see who this is." His curiosity piqued, Johnny asked. "How?" "I have an idea," David replied with a sense of urgency. "Just sit tight." Johnny gave a nod as David hurried back towards the house. His excitement had risen, even if he wasn't entirely sure what he could do about the situation.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Chapter 2. David's steps quickened as he rushed back to the house, a sense of urgency coursing through his veins. He strode directly to the door, swinging it open with force. Inside, he headed straight for the refrigerator and grabbed a chilled bottle of water before continuing out the back door to another paved path towards the selling point of this island, the giant lighthouse that stood 50 yards away. The climb up the lighthouse was no easy feat. Each step seemed to protest, sending twinges of discomfort through his joints. Yet he pressed on, driven by an unyielding resolve. 150 feet later, he finally reached the pinnacle, a round room encased in glass panels. In the center of the room, an ancient, long-dead bulb remained encased in its fixture, a relic of a bygone era. Surrounding it were modern, high-powered lights, once automated but now manually controlled. The lighthouse's original purpose had long faded into obscurity, but David cherished the nostalgia it invoked. Occasionally, he would illuminate it, basking in the memories of simpler times. Today, however, those lights served a practical purpose. With a deft motion, David disconnected one of the lights from its metal harness and aimed it across the water, focusing on a distant structure. He spotted the reflection on the horizon and began a rhythmic sequence of clicking the light on and off. Under his breath, he murmured, "I hope you saw that." A heavy silence hung in the air. And then, the reflections began anew, this time in a deliberate pattern. Short and medium bursts, followed by quick pauses. It took David a moment to piece together the puzzle. "Morse code, of course," he exclaimed, his voice tinged with realization. His prior learning of Morse code, for research purposes on a World War II spy novel, now proved invaluable. He rummaged through a nearby desk drawer, retrieving a pencil and paper before returning to the window to transcribe the incoming message. The repetition initially perplexed him, but soon the message became clear. "Scope. Wait. Telescope," David muttered. His decoding was indeed correct. The person on the other side of the water possessed a telescope. But the question remained, why were they announcing it? As he pondered this, David recalled he had a telescope of his own, stored somewhere in the house. He resumed flicking the massive light on and off, signaling his intention to return. Upon reaching the top of the lighthouse's winding stairs, David paused, gazing down at the daunting descent that awaited him. "You better think of everything you need, because it's going to be a while before you feel like making this trip again," he mused with a regretful sigh. He navigated the stairs and hastened to his study, where he retrieved the telescope from its wooden box. It wasn't a high-powered instrument, being an antique that had come with the house, but David believed it had the range to reach the distant building across the water, a half mile away. As he exited the room, his eyes landed on a whiteboard adorned with numerous plot points for his latest literary endeavor. "Not like anybody would ever read it anyway," he muttered with a wry smile. He erased the board quickly before pocketing the eraser and a handful of markers. Then he trudged back up the winding stairs to the lighthouse's apex. Using the light, he signaled to the mysterious person across the water, conveying that it would take him a moment to set up the telescope. Finally, With the telescope in place, he directed it toward the top of the distant building. As he scanned the front of the structure, recognition dawned on him. It was the Waterfront Museum. He had visited it before the apocalypse, appreciating its rich collection of maritime history. Yet, the idea of being trapped there for weeks on end was unfathomable. David's gaze locked onto a middle-aged man perched atop the museum, clad in a dark jumpsuit. A closer look revealed that the jumpsuit had turned dark due to dried blood. "What have you had to endure, my friend?" David wondered, his voice carrying a note of sympathy. He signaled the man by flashing the light several times, and in response, the man held up a makeshift sign that read, "My name is Oscar, the janitor here. I'm out of food. Need help." Next to Oscar was a telescope pointed in David's direction. David looked away from the telescope, torn between empathy for Oscar's plight and uncertainty about how he could provide assistance, even if he dared to cross the treacherous waters. The streets teemed with the menacing creatures, making a rescue nearly impossible. David struggled to find the words to write on the board. He chuckled softly at the irony. "Hell of a time to get writer's block," he murmured. Finally, he picked up his whiteboard and scrawled a message. "I don't know what I can do to help." He activated the light to convey the message, awaiting Oscar's response. "Just need help to get to the water. Streets are packed, but I can't see past the windows." Oscar's message came swiftly. Oscar erased the board and replaced it with a new message. "Museum is overrun too." After a moment of contemplation, David realized he possessed the unique vantage point that could make a difference, provided Oscar could reach the street below. He picked up his board once more and wrote another message. "Need to consult with a friend. I'll be back." David peered through the scope, his gaze fixed on the distant figure. The man below gave him a thumbs up. Standing at the top of the stairs, David couldn't help but let out a sigh. He muttered to himself, "Still regret not springing for the elevator. Just had to listen to the accountant, didn't I?" As David reached the house, he made a quick stop in the kitchen, filling a bag with a meager selection of crackers and sweets. Sacrificing these simple pleasures was a small price to pay if it could help rescue the stranded man. Down by the waterfront, David scanned the area and spotted Johnny basking in the weak sunlight. It was an unusual sight, considering the chill in the air, but Johnny seemed to relish the moment. "Are you okay, Johnny?" David asked, his concern evident. Johnny turned his head towards David, a hint of amusement in his eyes. "Have to take advantage of the sun while it's out, you know?" David nodded, though he couldn't quite understand Johnny's carefree attitude. "Did you find out what was causing that reflection?" Johnny asked as he continued to lounge, showing no sense of urgency. "There's a man named Oscar stuck on top of the museum across the water," David replied. Johnny responded casually, "That has to suck in a major way," his nonchalant demeanor contrasting sharply with the gravity of the situation. David felt a pang of frustration. "We have to help him." Johnny, however, remained unmoved. "We? Really? Let's be honest about the situation, David." Johnny continued, "Nothing is getting you off your little island paradise there, just like nothing is going to get me off this boat and back onto the mainland." David understood Johnny's reluctance, but he wasn't ready to give up. "Where's your compassion?" Johnny sat up, fixing a penetrating gaze on David. "You're one to talk." Caught off guard, David had no retort. He simply nodded in agreement. "Yeah, I know," he conceded. Johnny, recognizing his dependence on David for fresh water, motioned for him to continue. "Okay, let's hear it." David outlined his plan. "There are hundreds of those creatures blocking Oscar's path from the museum to the docks. If you can pull them away from the building, he'll have a chance." Johnny deliberated on the offer, but eventually shook his head. "Even if I don't get off the boat, it's still a major risk. It's relatively shallow water out there, and if enough of those creatures get into the water, they can get caught up in my propeller. It's not worth the risk. David countered with a tempting offer, tossing down a bag of goodies to Johnny. Here you go. And there will be another bag when he's safe. Johnny smiled at the treasures inside, but remained puzzled. We've been begging for help for a week now. Why in the world do you care so much about this man? David paused, his motivations not entirely clear to himself. Then it struck him. I've spent this entire apocalypse in relative luxury. So have you, if you think about it, and especially when you compare it to what he's gone through. Johnny nodded in understanding, sensing an opening for negotiation. 4 bags of food, and not just snacks, actual meals. David was taken aback by the demand. Absolutely not. Johnny shrugged and lay back down. Well, then give Oscar my condolences. After a brief hesitation, David relented. 3 bags, one of which will be enough for real meals. You have my word. Johnny agreed, and the two men reached a compromise. They both nodded, their agreement sealed. Johnny had one more request. Do you still have that radio I gave you? David confirmed, I do. Okay, Johnny replied. I'm going to head over now. You let Oscar know he needs to figure out a way to get down to street level. I'll await your signal to start a diversion. Tell him to get to the docks, and I'll pick him up. David reassured Johnny, I'll get him there. With their roles defined, the two men parted ways, each determined to do their part in the risky rescue mission. Chapter 3. Oscar peered through his telescope towards the lighthouse. Yet another message from the figure in the tower. Get to the first floor and be ready to run to the docks. Boat will be waiting. The cryptic instructions brought a wry smile to Oscar's face. He makes it sound like he's giving me directions to the coffee shop, he mused softly. He looked down at the whiteboard, thinking of his response. His body ached from days of unrelenting combat, but he was no stranger to pain. For 15 years, he'd served as the janitor in this very building. With a marker in hand, he penned a response to his mysterious correspondent. I'm moving. I can signal and read what you write, but won't be able to write back. He held the message up, waiting for the lighthouse to cast its reassuring beam. As the light signaled, Oscar once again peered through his telescope, reading the reply that came into focus. I'll be watching. Taken out of context, those words could be interpreted as a threat, and he couldn't help but chuckle at that fact. Oscar stretched his tired muscles, disassembling the telescope and carefully stowing it in his pocket along with a small mirror. His gaze shifted towards the docks, where hordes of zombies roamed. Hope you have a plan, and not just directions. Oscar muttered under his breath as he approached a nearby window and pushed his way inside. This small storage room had become his refuge for the past few days, a place he had fought his way to from the second floor, driven by the distant light he had spotted. Amidst the clutter, he spotted a rolled-up jacket on the floor. A rare item untouched by the stain of dried blood. Oscar's attention turned to a leather quiver in the corner. Originally designed to hold arrows from a Native American display, he had repurposed it, filling it with sharpened wooden mop handles. Effective makeshift weapons bearing the unmistakable stains of crimson. Examining a few of them, he noted how their tips lacked the penetrating power to breach a skull. However, a direct thrust into an eye socket proved to be an effective technique. Oscar pulled out a map of the museum, covered in his annotations. He had marked one entire room on the third floor as a no-go area, cautioning himself to avoid it. Smaller areas were circled, indicating supplies he had managed to scavenge. However, he couldn't help but fume at the memory of those who had left the building, looting the food stand before meeting their demise just outside the front door. Bags of food now taunted him from the street, just out of reach. But that was in the past, and his focus was on finding a way out. He selected one of the wooden stakes, readying it for battle, and threw the quiver over his shoulder. Just remember, you don't have to kill everything. Just get past it safely, Oscar reminded himself as he prepared for the trials ahead. Gently, he opened the door to the fourth floor, stepping into the dimly lit space. The expansive floor led to a railing that overlooked the third floor. Several corpses scattered about, remnants of his battle to get to safety a couple of days earlier. Below, there was a chorus of moans that attracted his attention. A half-sized replica of a 1700s merchant ship was encircled by a sea of zombies, their rotting forms swaying like a macabre tide. The ghastly sight would have unnerved most, but Oscar knew he could bypass this floor and reach the second floor directly. He shook his head at the grim scene and proceeded towards the stairs, the sound of movement emanating from behind the door. Oscar sighed, realizing he had left himself a challenging obstacle. Would have been so easy to stand and fight, kicking them back down the stairs, he muttered, reflecting on his previous decision. But exhaustion had driven him to bypass that conflict, and now he had to deal with the consequences of his choices. Pressing his ear to the door, he heard scratching and moans on the other side. Gripping his weapon tightly, he unleashed a powerful kick, causing the metal security door to swing open and knock a scratching ghoul backward. Oscar crashed through the door, his eyes locking onto the stumbling creature on the landing. In one swift motion, he aimed and struck the ghoul in the eye socket, ending its unlife with a single blow. The stake remained embedded in its eye as it fell to the ground. Another zombie on the landing took a faltering step towards him, but Oscar's height and strength worked to his advantage. He seized the creature's shirt and flung it toward the railing. The zombie bent over, and Oscar grabbed its legs, sending it tumbling over the side. It crashed headfirst onto the stairs below, its neck audibly cracking. More moans reached his ears from the landing beside him. Oscar turned and spotted a couple more creatures navigating the stairs. Bloodstains marked their previous falls. Oscar yanked the wooden stake out from the other creature and readied it for battle. Descending the stairs, he reached halfway to the landing before stopping. Picking his target, he drove the stake deep into its chest, maintaining control over it as the zombie thrashed futilely. He manipulated the creature, pushing it back into another one before moving them both to the next set of stairs. He shoved them down, and they tumbled, one succumbing to a cracked skull, the other a tangled mess of broken limbs. The latter struggled to rise, but ultimately failed, its limbs failing. Oscar descended further, using the railing to leap over it gracefully. He heard the frustrated moans of the trapped creature above, but paid them no mind, as they posed no threat now. Reaching the second landing, Oscar pressed his ear against the door, listening for any signs of movement. Faint moans reached his ears, but they seemed distant. His gaze shifted to the first floor door below. While it looked clear, he knew that it wasn't. On the other side of the door was a collection of heavy objects that he and the other survivors had pushed over, not wanting to fight another front in their war of the undead. In hindsight, he should have cleared the way for himself before making his ascent. But what was done was done. He turned back towards the second floor door and eased it open, allowing a slender gap through which he could peer inside. The sight that met his eyes was one of eerie dread. Zombies were scattered throughout the upper level, none of which were close to him. To his left, sunlight poured in through the windows, leaving dark shadows that contrasted with the light. The second floor space was unlike any other in the building. The large room adjacent to the stairwell went from the front to the back, while a wall blocked off the rest of the floor, doors leading to a pair of hallways that circled around the building. Oscar was confused by the number of creatures on the floor, however, as there were far more than were here the last time he passed through. He strained his memory, attempting to piece together what happened to cause this situation. Then it hit him. In the next section of the building lay an open stairwell, bridging the gap between the second and third floors. The noise from his battle a few days prior must have attracted some of the creatures down. Oscar, voice laden with a touch of humor, muttered to himself, "Well, this is going to be fun." He couldn't see into the room directly in front of him, so he had no idea what to expect. The door towards the back of the building was wide open, however, allowing creatures to wander in. Quietly, Oscar produced a stake from his arsenal, employing it as a makeshift doorstop for the emergency exit to prevent any disruptive clatter when it closed. Stepping out of his hiding place, he pressed himself against the wall, moving cautiously through the shadows to reach the window. In the darkness, he retrieved a small mirror from his pocket, sending a series of reflective signals towards the lighthouse. His gaze barely grazed the window's edge, cautious not to step into the revealing light. A tense minute passed, and then a glimmer of light returned in response. He carefully extracted his telescope, extending it for use. However, despite his best efforts, it emitted an audible click as it extended, an unfortunate sound that garnered the attention of several creatures in the room. They groaned and lurched in his direction. "Damn it," Oscar cursed under his breath. Time was not on his side. He glanced back at the lighthouse, his eyes scanning the sign that ominously declared, "Next room is full of those things. No way to get past." "Oh my God, it's full," Oscar muttered anxiously. "How do I get out of here?" As he pondered his options, one of the zombies drew nearer. Swiftly, he retrieved one of his remaining four weapons and thrust it into the creature's eye, sending it crumpling to the ground. However, half a dozen more advanced, their lifeless eyes fixed upon him from about 10 yards away. His mind raced, grappling with what to do next. He knew he lacked the strength to clear the barricade on the first floor, and the third floor offered an even bleaker alternative. He then turned his focus towards the window. The other side revealed a significant ledge, approximately 18 inches in width, fashioned from solid concrete. While he couldn't spot an immediate route to descend to the first floor, he had to place his faith in the unknown, for inaction promised certain doom. "Suddenly, starvation doesn't look so bad," Oscar mused with a touch of gallows humor. Oscar flung open the window and gingerly positioned himself on the narrow ledge. With a deep breath, he stepped out, slamming the window shut behind him. He pressed his body against the glass, peering back inside to find the zombies pressed up against the glass just like him. In the tense silence, he extracted his mirror once more, directing its reflection towards the lighthouse. A few moments later, the light flickered to life. Oscar didn't need to read the sign. He simply shrugged and shook his head. "Yeah, I know, man," he whispered. "I know." Chapter 4. Oscar stood perfectly still, his back pressed against the cold glass of the building. He refused to glance downward, avoiding the terrifying sight of the hungry horde of zombies below. Even the thought of the pavement beneath him was unnerving, but the knowledge that a sea of rotting flesh awaited below was far worse. "Okay, Oscar, this was your bright idea," he muttered to himself, the fear evident in his voice. "How are you getting out of this?" His gaze remained fixed on the scene outside. About 70 yards away, he could make out the docks, but 1,000 ghouls stood between him and his escape. Just off the docks, a decent-sized boat caught his eye. He hadn't noticed it before, but he assumed it was meant for him. As he watched, the lighthouse beacon flickered to life again, gaining his attention. Struggling to pull out his telescope, Oscar finally managed to get it open. He gazed towards the lighthouse, relieved at the message, "Drainage pipe, 40 yards to your left." Oscar's eyes darted to the 18-inch ledge that snaked along the building side. It was precarious, and he wasn't a fan of heights, but he knew he had to press on. As he inched along, he could hear the excited moans and growls emanating from the undead horde below. "Yeah. You wish I'd fall," he muttered to the creatures below. "Bunch of undead assholes." His hands trembled as he reached the stairwell section of the building, which jetted out a bit, forcing him to contort his body to remain pressed against the wall. After a few moments of hesitation, he summoned his courage and made the turn, pressing his back against the wall. It was a simple maneuver, yet he stood there, gathering himself, fully aware that someone in the lighthouse was likely having a good laugh at his expense. "Come on, man, get it together," he urged himself. Oscar steadied himself as he continued to move around the side of the building, finally reaching a point where he could see a small alleyway between the museum and a nearby storage building. Although there was a horde of ghouls below, a small chain-link fenced area surrounded the drainage pipe's descent point. The fence was covered by a blue tarp, providing some cover. Oscar retrieved a mirror and signaled to the lighthouse that he intended to descend to ground level. He received a reassuring signal in return. "Okay, Oscar, just like sliding down a pole at recess," he muttered to himself. He inched closer to the pole, carefully eyeing the oblivious creatures below. But just as he was about to begin his descent, a loud siren blared from the water. Oscar assumed it was the boat causing the commotion and watched as it slowly moved away from the docks. He strained to see through the partially obstructed view caused by the neighboring building, but he could discern most of the zombies shambling away from the docks. "Move, man! Move! This is your chance," he urged himself. With renewed determination, Oscar grabbed the drainage pipe and began to shimmy down it cautiously. He moved slowly, not wanting to risk a slip and a hard fall. He had been through enough injuries already without adding a fall to the list. Eventually, he reached the ground, landing a bit harder than he would have liked. It made some noise, drawing the attention of a couple of nearby creatures that pressed against the tarp-covered fence. Their shadows moved ominously against the fabric. Oscar knew that their noisy presence might attract more undead, so he quickly retrieved one of his stakes and prepared himself, lifting the tarp to find his targets. Without hesitation, he placed the stake in one of the fence slots, treating it like a pool cue and sending it straight through the eye socket of the nearest ghoul. He moved swiftly to the next one, repeating the process before letting the tarp fall back into place. Oscar remained motionless, unwilling to make a sound, letting the boat serve as the Pied Piper, luring the zombies away from the docks. As he waited, he approached the gate on the fence, checking to ensure it could be easily opened. Despite its appearance of security, it was unlocked, with a simple latch that needed flipping. He chuckled softly to himself, wondering if this had been part of his job and no one had bothered to inform him. Finally, he shrugged, thinking, "What are they going to do? Fire me." Gripping his stake tightly, Oscar pulled back the tarp slightly to peer out toward the street. There were still a couple of dozen ghouls between him and the docks. His mind raced, debating whether to make his move now or wait. He couldn't see the lighthouse, and uncertainty gnawed at him. "Do I go now? Do I keep waiting? I can't see the lighthouse," he mused. The decision was made for him as the alarm, which had been driving the zombies away from the dock, suddenly ceased. In its place, Johnny's voice came through firmly. "If you're going to make a run for it, now is the time, my man," Johnny's voice echoed. "That answers that question," Oscar muttered to himself, readying himself for the sprint to the docks. Oscar approached the rusty gate, his fingers trembling as he flipped open the latch. With a swift kick, he sent it swinging open, the loud creaking noise echoing through the desolate street, which drew the attention of a couple of zombies lurking near the front of the building. Their low, guttural moans filled the air, alerting others in the vicinity who began to shuffle toward him. He sprinted with all his might toward the front of the building, veering to his left, desperate to avoid the creatures that had first spotted him. In his haste, he succeeded in dodging them. But just as he reached his destination, another ghoul emerged from around the corner. Oscar attempted to lower his shoulder to push the creature aside, but his effort only sent him tumbling to the ground. He hit the hard pavement with a jolt, momentarily stunned. However, the cacophony of moans and the grasping hands of approaching zombies snapped him back to reality. Scrambling to his feet, Oscar fought off several creatures that were dangerously close, their bony fingers clawing at his shirt. One managed to grip him momentarily, but with a burst of strength, he broke free and resumed his desperate sprint towards the docks. As Oscar's legs pumped furiously, he reached the edge of the docks. To his dismay, several zombies still occupied the rickety structure. His eyes darted toward the water, and he could see the boat slowly making its way back to him, still a couple of hundred yards away. He dispatched one zombie with a well-placed stab. The one behind it lunged forward, and Oscar, instead of stabbing, delivered a powerful shoulder bash, sending it tumbling into the water. However, instead of a large splash, it was somewhat muted. He peered over the edge, terror gripping him as he realized that the creature had landed on top of a submerged horde, their rotting arms outstretched, not quite breaking through the water. It would have to wait, however, as more creatures approached him on the dock. Oscar unleashed a frenzied assault, stabbing a couple of ghouls in the eye, ending their existence. Then, changing his tactic, he drove his stake into the gut of one, pushing it backward and knocking the next one off the dock. They thrashed in the water below. Drawing another wooden stake from his quiver, Oscar took aim at the last two ghouls obstructing his path. With swift stabs, he dispatched them both. Panting heavily, he reached the end of the docks, turning to see dozens more creatures shuffling towards him, just a minute away. He glanced back at the boat, still 100 yards away, and waved frantically, urging them to hurry. Johnny's voice crackled over the loudspeaker. "Gotta take it slow, my man. Can't risk the propeller hitting one of those things." Hitting one of those things. Oscar's voice quivered with fear as he peered over the dock's end, seeing faint outlines of submerged creatures reaching up. "You gotta be kidding me," Oscar muttered. Realizing the boat wouldn't arrive in time, Oscar faced his worst fear, swimming in zombie-infested waters. He clambered onto the railing at the dock's edge, lowering himself toward the water, but stopping just short of submerging. Gazing at the water, he noticed a small gap between the outstretched zombie hands and the water's surface. Glancing back at the boat, still approaching but distant, and then at the advancing zombies on the dock, he knew he had no other option. "Here goes nothing," Oscar said with a gulp. With a push, Oscar flipped over, landing as flat as possible on the water's surface. Despite his efforts, he sank slightly upon impact, feeling the fingertips of submerged zombies brush against him. Fear propelled him to swim frantically, arms and legs churning the water to create as much motion as possible, hoping it would deter the creatures below from gaining a grip on him. To his astonishment, he managed to reach slightly deeper water, where he no longer felt the cold, clammy touch of the undead. Soon, he reached the boat, and Johnny pulled him aboard. "Permission to come aboard," Oscar said, shivering from the freezing water, but relieved to be safe. "Get on up here, my man," Johnny replied. Oscar hit the deck, shivering from the freezing water, but relieved to be safe. Johnny navigated the boat to deeper waters and handed Oscar an emergency heat blanket and some hand warmers, providing him with a temporary reprieve from the chill. "Thank you," Oscar said gratefully. "Sure thing, man. Once we get back to the others, we'll get you a hot shower." "Well, lukewarm shower. But given how you feel right now, it'll feel like the fires of hell raining down upon you," Johnny joked. "Sounds like heaven to me," Oscar chuckled. Both of them laughed as Johnny's radio clicked on, and David's voice came through. Johnny handed the radio to Oscar. "Is this my mystery friend in the lighthouse?" Oscar inquired. "It's good to hear your voice, Oscar. I'm David," came the reply. "Pleasure to meet you. Appreciate the assist there," Oscar replied. "It was the least I could do," David said. "Look forward to meeting you face to face," Oscar said with a smile. There was a long pause on the line before David responded. Sitting at the top of the lighthouse, he watched Johnny's boat return to the flotilla. "Soon, my friend. Soon. Now, go get warm," David said as he put down the radio, his mind wandering. Johnny had put his life on the line to rescue a perfect stranger, who sounded very appreciative of the fact he was out of that nightmare. "Maybe it's time to start having some friends over. Even if it's just for a night in the house," David thought to himself. David wasn't entirely convinced that was the right move, but today had at least opened him up to the possibility. The end.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.